You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more. So I'm Pastor Emma.
And I'm Pastor Edwin.
So Pastor Edwin, you had a powerful experience recently, and I'd love for you to tell us about that experience and the inspiration it's giving you.
Yes, so last time we talked about a trip I made to San Antonio, Texas, and it was through the Duke Divinity Program that had received a grant through the Lilly Endowment. And it was a Christian leadership program. And it was really interesting, and I'm halfway through it, so I'm going to go back out there in January. But I had such a powerful experience, and it came at such an opportune time. We were talking last time, Pastor Emma, with like ministry can be really challenging for a variety of reasons. It's just emotionally, spiritually, and mentally and physically tiring. Because you're sort of dealing with a bunch of crises. You're dealing with the dynamics of people who all have different needs and all different wants and different levels of self-awareness. Some of them might be in leadership. Some of them might not want to be in leadership. You're also getting all this, you know, feedback from the culture that says, yeah, we're not really interested in joining your organization, right? We're not interested in being a part of what you're working on. So it can feel lonely. You know, that you're doing something on a Sunday when everyone else is having brunch or like going to the park and you're like, I'm on my way to Sunday worship. Remember me. Also can't go out Saturday night because you got to prepare for Sunday morning. Now you may still sometimes go out Saturday night, but you know, you know, your holidays are holidays, you know, they're holy days. That's where that word comes from. That's why you're usually at church for those that season. So it can be challenging for a number of reasons. But I got to go to San Antonio and I got refreshed because I got to hear several stories. Last time I shared the Labyrinth Walk at the Alamo, which played with the themes of remembering the Alamo and how Jesus says to remember him and how memory and story, you know, works in our faith. This time I want to talk to you about another church. It's a Mennonite church that basically collaborated with a Presbyterian church in San Antonio. And what they're doing is they're doing a lot of trauma-informed and trauma-transforming ministry. Mm. They're doing a lot of work specifically with migrants. So in the recent political issues regarding immigration in this country and migrants crossing the border, there was basically one of these, oh, you're a church and you want to protest how our inhumane treatment of migrants? Well, here are 500 that we're going to drop off at your church and deal with it. And so this church said, okay. And they mobilized to take care of these migrants. That was, you know, in recent history. But it all started with actually a woman who was walking from that church and saw a young woman who looked afraid with her child. And she turned over to look at her, and this woman who looked like she was a migrant, you know, with her dress and kind of the fact that she couldn't speak English, this is at the bus station, looked like she was lost and confused and really reacted strongly to her asking her if she needed any help. So she left because she sort of said, something's wrong with this person and it's not my problem. But then the Spirit,
dang it!
But the Spirit sort of rested on her heart and continued to encourage her to go back. Mm-hmm. So she was like, fine, I'll go back. Only this time she knelt down and said, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. And the woman responded differently. Mm-hmm. And basically, in the universal language of human beings in need, they were able to communicate that she needed food. She needed a place, a warm, safe place. And over time, she got to learn her story. And her story is one of deep trauma. Mm-hmm. The best ways to compare it, and this is a lot of what I learned on that visit to the church. Best way to compare trauma is, because we usually think about severe, extreme events. Mm-hmm. And that's true. You know, that's exactly, you know, so war can trigger extreme trauma, hence PTSD. So there are moments like that, you know, if you were in the middle of a terrorist attack, right? If, you know, those kinds of things. But there are also things that can happen over an extended period of time And actually, this is similar to combat situations that force you to be on alert and trigger in you, like your biology responds to crisis. And so the chemicals and, you know, everything that's happening to your body in that moment. And migrants experience this on a significant level because they're leaving what is somewhat a place of home, right? They're likely leaving because it's not super safe, but it's at least something safe, right? The whole devil you know versus the devil you don't know. Right. It's a place of familiarity. It's a place of where you belong, where you kind of know who you are because of your relationships. And the language and the culture, all those things that you share that help kind of center you. And then some kind of crisis erupts that threatens that safety, whether it's drug traffickers or kidnappers or civil war or simply gang corruption, all sorts of reasons why you might feel so desperate to leave that space and cross the lands. Now, in order to do that, several people can, you know, some do it legally, you know, and they, you know, purchase a flight or they, you know, they know somebody in the United States. Other people are in such desperate situations that they pay what's known as a coyote. So they pay a coyote and they pay $10,000. Mm-hmm. They might pay $15,000. I mean, it depends on the market, black market price, right? And these people agree to take them over in some, you know, sophisticated scheme, which might be a truck or, you know, this, that, and the other. As they're traveling, they're of course not, the coyotes don't always come through with their promise, right? Sometimes they go, just kidding, here, I'm taking your $15,000, but I'm leaving you in some town in Mexico, right? And now you're sort of triggered, you're betrayed. Some of the most vulnerable people on these migrant caravans might be abused. Mm-hmm. They might be assaulted. They might be robbed. They might be threatened, intimidated. And this is happening multiple times. If the coyote actually does follow through and takes you on the truck, you might be on a truck for several days where you are using the bathroom in the same place where everyone is hiding because there is no bathroom. Mm-hmm. You're eating in that same place. You're drinking water or not. So there might be days where you have no water and no food and you can be facing extreme heat or extreme cold. I've met some of these people and some of them, and this is over years, some of them have seen people die, right? So under extreme duress, human body can shut down. Some people have just died for a variety of reasons. So you're seeing people go to the bathroom in front of you. You're seeing in the same place that you eat, by the way, hopefully you don't get sick. And number three, you are seeing people die. Mm-hmm. Number four, you have to hold extreme silence because if there's ever any sound, you know, that's it. You might get caught. Now, on your final stop, when the coyote finally releases you, one of three things might happen. One is, just kidding, I'm stealing your money and I've brought you to a town to shoot you, kill you, or sell you to human trafficking, you know, or something else. Number two, they might actually follow through and then you're let off and you relatively know where to go and you find a safe place. Or number three, which is more one of the most common, you now have to fend for yourself and figure it out where you're going next. And then all the conditions you have to deal with that. Okay, so extreme trauma. Okay?
Right.
Some people have lost their children. Some people had to leave one of their children behind so that they could save the younger child. I mean, all these calculations that are going on. And now you meet this person at the church, from a church at the bus station. Mm-hmm. So this woman reacted with trauma. Best way to compare trauma, to go back to that, is drowning. Mm-hmm. So that's what I learned. When you're drowning, you shut off rationality, you know. Now, unless you've been trained for, you know, for the circumstance of drowning,
right.
You shut off any kind of rationality. You have basically one focus, which is to survive at any cost. So you flail your arms around. Often lifeguards report when they're rescuing somebody from drowning, they get hurt because they're getting smacked and hit. Even though, I'm here to help you. Right. Doesn't matter. The logic has been shut off. This is now pure survival instinct. So the lifeguards are trained to get somebody from behind. So that, first off, that person can't resist, you know, mm-hmm. from in front. But also, so that person doesn't drown the lifeguard. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. So the lifeguard has to be someone that will not drown. And the lifeguard has to soothe them. So there are all these kind of movements and words that they're trained to use and tones that they're trained to use to soothe someone and bring them safely to harbor, right? And they have to find a stable place. Okay. So this church, and their pastor particularly that spoke to us, talked about that's what they've had to learn in dealing with these migrants. Mm-hmm. How do you do trauma-informed and trauma-transforming ministry? But this is like what hit me. So I'm going to get into like all sorts of things. It was just one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced. He said, at the center of our Christian faith is the person who was traumatized mm-hmm. and transformed that trauma and therefore transforms and can transform all trauma. It's not only a trauma-informed faith because of Jesus who was crucified, mm-hmm. but it's a trauma-transforming faith mm-hmm. because of Jesus who was raised from the dead and the church that's born out of that. And that just hit me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just thought like, whoa, right. that gives it a different mission, a different feel. This is Christianity is not there to just tell you, hey, you're okay, or, you know, comfort you here and there. No, it's mm-hmm. like way more than that. It's to take your trauma, and in some ways, we all experience it, some at far greater levels. Mm-hmm. Some not so much. Some experience really broken families. Some people, you know, experience broken relationships. Mm-hmm. Some people have lost their health or their financial stability or their home or their job, right? There are these traumatic moments in life. And how amazing it is that our faith is about not only addressing that because it's trauma-informed, like, okay, how do you have compassion? But transforming that. Mm-hmm. That if we give that over to God, that it gets transformed somehow. So he shared, the pastor shared little things that they do when you're dealing with people who've gone through trauma. Mm-hmm. And this has just made me like, oh my gosh, I've got to get educated on this. Mm-hmm. But for example, one of the things that gets triggered when somebody's traumatized is the animal instinct, because that's the survivor instinct.
Right.
So if you were to square up, right, so our shoulders are facing each other, mm-hmm. and I were to look you in the eyes, in the animal kingdom, which we're technically a part of as mammals, right, that triggers a threat.
Right.
So immediately, if you don't know this person, mm-hmm. you don't trust them, you don't, you know, that is now a threat. I am now threatening you, mm-hmm. right? So when people are traumatized, the thing you want to avoid is looking at them directly in the eye. You don't want to be squared up with them shoulder to shoulder. You almost want to be at an angle where you're creating triangles. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly was like, oh, so you're triangulating. And nobody laughed. But, you know, I was like, but in a sense, right. this is the healthy triangulating, yeah. right? You're creating triangles. So he said, you know, when you hand them a coffee, if you hand it straight to them, you're now threatening them. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to hand it to them this way. Mm. So now they can reach out into a neutral space that is not directly in front of you and not directly in front of them. It is a space they can choose to now grab this cup of coffee or whatever it is you're offering them.
How does this trauma-informed approach compare with what we typically think of as the work of church?
I think that's what I was probably trying to say inarticulately earlier is that often churches is like, oh, it's just a place to feel good. Mm-hmm. It's just a place to have a program. It's just a space to like meet up with people I like to see. And all of those things might be just very fine. Mm-hmm. I want to have a concert experience, or I want to have an emotional experience of God. Those might all be fine.
Right.
But to have a trauma-informed and transforming faith is to say, who are the people that aren't in this space because they are currently being traumatized
right.
or they have been traumatized and they don't feel safe anywhere. In fact, they may even have been traumatized at church.
Right.
Right. And, you know, so what does it mean to then look at our mission, our budgets, our committees, everything we do about how is it that we help create a safe space together?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we become healing agents in the name of Jesus? Henri Nouwen has that great book, The Wounded Healer. I think that speaks exactly to not only Christian leadership for pastors, ministers, etc., but for Christians to say, there is a wound that has happened at some point in your life. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was you were a child, a teenager, grown up, whatever that major wound is. That wound shapes the way you look at the world. It shapes the way you behave in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It shapes what you believe about the world and people and God. So what if we gave that wound to Jesus and let Jesus heal it in such a way that we become healers who don't ignore that we were wounded?
Mm-hmm.
We carry that wound as a sign that not only has Jesus healed or is Jesus healing, but Jesus will heal and can heal you. And we then practice compassion. We practice creating spaces, or like we talked about the last time, showing up in people's lives, especially at the time of their wounding or in response to their wounding. So that's why like funerals are so mm-hmm. important. Like, you know, nobody, I mean, besides you, because you said you love going to funerals, but like nobody's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait till I'm invited to my next funeral, right?
I love doing them. Yeah, I don't like going.
Correct, correct, correct. Yeah, yeah.
Different.
Yes, this is true. So, you know, it's not like now, but a wedding, you might be like, yeah, 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 I want to go to the wedding, right? I want to go to the birthday party, but not a funeral. And yet funerals are so important because they're showing up in the place of somebody's wound. And again, you can like go down the list. Somebody mm-hmm. who's experienced racism, somebody who's experienced homophobia, somebody who's experienced job loss. I mean, whatever that trauma, that wound is, how do we show up for people in that way? That's how we can be wounded healers. So creating those safe spaces. Now, this particular church does it through, they offer a counseling center. And then they also have like a lawyer who helps those people deal with their legal issues. And the way they do it is like, hey, we'll give you a free office. And in return, you do all this work pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, sweet. You know, free office space in San Antonio. Like, uh-huh. awesome. So they're being really creative. And actually, they've received a couple grants, a couple funders and donations to expand their space and like update it, upgrade it. They're going to upgrade their kitchen. Kind of like we've been talking about the kitchen incubator.
Right.
They're doing something similar for their people who are traumatized and who are migrants. They're just like kicking butt, and they just have a sense of purpose and mission because they're like, oh my gosh, you know, we've been traumatized. These people especially have been traumatized. And guess what? We have a faith that speaks directly to it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we walk alongside people? That's the key. Okay. So maybe the best answer to your question is the key is not how do you take over somebody's life?
Mm-hmm.
Not how do you tell somebody how to live their life? Not how do you take control of people's decisions. It's how do you come alongside them such that you create spaces where you can really hear them
mm-hmm.
and they can experience the moment as being heard.
Right.
That's the key. The key is not do you have all the resources. No, the resource you need the most is one you already are equipped to deal with, which is can you truly hear? Don't try to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Try to love the person.
Right.
That's what trauma-informed and trauma-transforming ministry does. It stops trying to say, oh, you need backpacks, you need food, you need water, you need this, you need... No, it goes, I'm going to just be here with you. I'm going to mm-hmm. show up in your life in the way Jesus shows up in mine. And I'm going to, I believe in those holy moments, Jesus shows up
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be here and I'm going to hear you. I'm going to listen to your story. And then from there, we're going to come and address the needs
mm-hmm.
that might arise out of that conversation. So that's what was really powerful about what they're doing there. And it's incredible, deep, hard work because you have to build trust. And like something you realize is a lot of the like because it tends to be women, right? Women and children that they exhibit all the evolutionary traits of trauma and crisis situations. So what do they do? When you try to help them, they try to run away, flight. Or they try to fight you, right? Fight or flight.
Right.
They try to avoid. So they might not be able to fly away or escape, but they try to avoid. They try to redirect. They try to push you away, keep you at the surface, never going deep. They might exhibit all sorts of ways. And he says the way to understand it is like a drowning victim. Don't take it personally. It's not about you. In fact, sometimes they lack boundaries. He's like, I have to be very careful when children, for instance, suddenly see in me like a father figure.
Right.
And they become too close. And I'm realizing not only do I have to set boundaries, but also
transference is bad.
That affection is actually not love. He's like, there is no way someone can love you in 3 days.
Right.
I've known you for 3 days. What you have is affection that you think will get you this reward. And I have to teach them, the reason I'm doing this is not so you can give me affection.
Right.
The reason I'm doing this is because of the grace of God in my life. And like, you want to talk about works righteousness, you know, people debate about this. That is as real as works righteousness can possibly get. Forget all the theological debates for a moment and just think works righteousness. This little boy thought, if I keep showing affection, my family keeps getting fed. And this pastor had to break that pattern and say, that's not why you're being fed. And in fact, I don't want your affection because it's not appropriate, because you have to understand who are the safe adults you can be with. And I'm a safe adult, but I'm not the safe adult that you need to show this affection to. And that's not why you're being fed and sheltered here.
Right.
So he would have to set boundaries like, I'm sorry, I can't hug you right now. You know, because he had to be able to create a truly safe space where that kid wasn't just trying to earn food through affection. Like, you see how it just gets so deep in there, and human beings are just so natural at it. Like, you learn the game, and it's either direction, right? It's like, if I become aggressive and violent, or if I become really loving and affection, I can get what I want. Pick your path. But both are poisonous.
Right.
Both lead to a poisonous relationship where everything's about transaction. And it's not about the deep work of like, no, I'm going to help you in order to help you because God has helped me. That's it. That's the only thing this is based on. The absolute free, unmerited grace of God. That's when it becomes so much more powerful to me. That's works righteousness I want to talk about. Not the stale debates about it. I want to say, oh my gosh, if a little child thinks they can earn food and shelter through affection, we've got to break that pattern and be able to say, that's not why we're helping you. We're helping you because we've been tasked by God to help you. That's it. That's the greater goal. So anyway, that was just such a powerful experience. And there's so much more to that. But I just would recommend to pastors, to church leaders, and to every Christian, if you can get information about trauma, about people who've experienced trauma, rather than casting judgments as we tend to do, or rather than trying to fix and rescue, let Jesus do the saving. Let Jesus also do the saving of you. Like, let yourself be healed.
Right.
So as the wounded healer, you also need healing. So get informed about ways that you can have compassion for people who are going through a lot. I've had to learn this. And, you know, you'd probably push back on me about this. But for a long time, I really couldn't connect with people who lost a pet and were, like, distraught over it. Like, I just couldn't understand it. And at first, like, you know, when I was younger, I made fun of it. I was like, okay, really?
Right.
And then later I was like, whatever, I'm not going to make fun of it, but now I'm going to ignore it. And then I realized, like, whoa, some people have had such deep relationships with their pet that, like, who am I to judge, you know, why they're... Because my issue was judgmentalism, right? I was saying, well, they're not a human being, like, goodness gracious, like, you know... And, but really, you know what it was about? It was about the scarcity of my emotions. I felt like I was operating on E, you know, on empty.
Right.
Like, I felt like I didn't have enough to give. So I was like, listen, if your child didn't die and it was a pet, I'm sorry, I don't have time to deal with it. As opposed to now, I'm able to go, no, people have relationships with their homes. Mm-hmm. They might have relationships with their pets, a place that they grew up in, for whatever reason. Right. And we've got to allow a space for them to grieve it, not to judge them, mm-hmm. and not to fix it either, mm-hmm. but to just come alongside them and say, hey, I'm sorry about your dog.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry about your cat. I'm sorry that, you know, you've lost something that was meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's that switching it about, you know, it being judged and being or being fixed and now coming alongside. That's the key to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you try to come in and fix it, you're actually going to re-traumatize the person.
Right.
But if you ignore it, you also leave them to their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can come alongside, it's not like it's always going to work. There are some people who will never let you in.
Right.
There are some people who will never respond to it. But there are some who might just do it because you helped create a safe space and you came alongside them and offered them some resources. So go get, there's actually a ton of, not a ton, but there are some resources out there about mm-hmm. trauma-informed worship.
Right.
I asked the pastor about that. I was like, oh, so what do you think about trauma-informed worship and liturgy mm-hmm. and church programming? He's like, I like it, I don't love it, because mm-hmm. I don't think it's enough that it's trauma-informed. Right. It needs to be trauma-transforming. Because the problem with trauma-informed, it's like, well, try not to use this imagery. Try not to mm-hmm. use this language.
Right.
Try to avoid these things. He's like, you can't live in a world where you can possibly avoid all that.
Right.
But if you can show some compassion about how you do it and some opportunities for trauma transformation, that's the key.
Yep.
So we encourage everybody out there to get more informed about trauma and the resources available out there for how we can walk alongside veterans. Walk alongside people who are dealing with mental health issues and stigmas. Walk alongside people who've experienced severe trauma in whatever form. And so we encourage you to do that.
Sounds good.
You want to close this? Do a little closure?
So, friends, we know that people who are listening carry all sorts of things with them. Some of you may have been listening to this and you're like, yes, I carry that trauma in my body and my soul. Just know that you are not alone, that there is a God of grace, a God who loves you no matter what you carry, no matter what you have gone through, that God is walking alongside you even in those experiences. And God walks alongside us as we learn and we grow from one another. If you're looking for a place where you can learn and grow and just be yourself and you don't have to be perfect, we encourage you to find us on Facebook, on all the social media places that we are, mostly Facebook. And also here, and find a place where you can experience God. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.